You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here for Columbia Calling, episode 279. I am reporting in from London, England, where I'm on my annual jaunt back to the land of roast beef and scones. And yes, I've been traveling around London and the home counties, and I'll be heading up to Scotland. But of course, it's these jaunts back, not only to teach my son a little bit more about his heritage and to ensure that he gets a good accent too, but it's a, you know, we're enjoying a belly full of Brexit nonsense taking place here. And it reminds me why I love living in Colombia. I think I need this little break each year just to remind myself that we've got it really good in Colombia, despite the challenges, despite the obvious hiccups. We live a very privileged life in my adopted homeland. So without further ado, let me just quickly tell you that this episode 279 is aimed at those of you who are perhaps, you know, humming and hawing and thinking, what can I do to help in Colombia? How can I be of some sort of inspiration or receive inspiration? And that's why we talked to Maud, and she's on the line from Cali. Maud is originally French. We spent a long time in London, but now she's based in Colombia. And we'll hear about her foundation, the Casa Nómada and Defiant Theatre. It's theatre for change that she based for 3 months with her partner, Andres, in Tolú, and Tolú in Sucre on the Caribbean coast. And of course, 3 months have come to an end, so we talked to her about that and learn that they'll be heading off to Buenaventura on the Pacific coast. So a pretty challenging place to go and set up again. So we'll talk and find out how the jobs went and how the projects went in Tolú and how they think it might go in Buenaventura. So I will leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsema of Columbia Reports, who will give you the weekly update, the news segment. And then segment three, we'll be back with Maud in Cali talking to us about the Casa Nómada and Defiant Theatre. So thank you again, and don't go away. We'll be right back.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for June 25, 2019. The FARC has stepped up pressure on President Ivan Duque to implement a peace deal signed by the former rebels with former President Juan Manuel Santos. While the United Nations mission in Colombia is preparing its monthly report to the Security Council, the former guerrillas accused the government of violating the 2016 agreement twice this week. According to the FARC, the killing of the mobilized members and the government's failure to cooperate with the tripartite commission that monitors the peace process are the latest failures to comply with the peace deal. Colombia's War Crimes Tribunal ordered emergency security measures against members of the military who are testifying against their superiors about the mass killing of civilians. The security measures were specifically for those who testify against former Army Chief General Mario Montoya and Colonel Hernan Mejia, the former executioner of paramilitary organization AUC. Both Army commanders allegedly played a key role in the so-called false positive scandals, but have categorically denied any responsibility. The killing of a community leader in northern Colombia spurred a fierce reaction throughout the country. A video of the victim's son screaming and crying on finding his mother's dead body triggered a wave of indignation. People in Medellin took to the streets in a spontaneous protest, while Colombians on social media massively expressed their anger and grief over the ongoing mass killing of community leaders and human rights defenders. A journalist was assassinated in southwest Colombia for the second time in just 1 week. The latest victim is a former FARC guerrilla who became a reporter of NC Noticias, an online news platform that was set up as part of the 2016 peace deal. So far this year, 3 Colombian journalists have been assassinated, the highest number since 2003. US President Donald Trump surprisingly complimented his Colombian counterpart Iván Duque on Saturday. Trump had previously bashed Duque on 2 occasions about the failure to effectively combat drug trafficking. But in an interview with US television network Telemundo, Trump said that the Colombian president is doing a good job. Colombia's Caribbean coast is going through a period of extreme tension after a pamphlet signed by the AGC said that the paramilitaries would take control over the region from the regional Pachenca gang. The pamphlet appeared just days after police killed the drug gang's longtime leader, Chucho Mercancía. According to the pamphlet, the paramilitaries would be sending 600 commandos to the region between Santa Marta and La Guajira and order Pachenca gang members to surrender, leave, or be killed. Local and foreign businesses were ordered to end all extortion payments to the gang. This is the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
Yes, we're back. This is Colombia Calling, and I'm here in London, England. This is my summer holiday in the rain. Yes, but this is episode 279. The Colombia Calling podcast does not end for summer. We continue going through. And like I said in the first segment of this show, we have a very special guest. She has been doing fascinating things up in Tolú, which is on the Caribbean coast. And then from there, she'll be moving elsewhere. We get on the phone with her in Cali. Her name is Maud Madlin. She's the director, co-director of Defiant Reality. It's a theatre-based outfit called Theatre for Change. And, well, welcome on Colombia Calling, Maud.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation, Richard. Really happy to be here speaking with you from Cali.
No, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. But I wanted to ask you, in the end of these things, how on earth did you decide on Tolú as a place to set up?
So the criteria was actually quite simple. It needed to be a place that had less than 30,000 in terms of population, 30,000 people, and that had no permanent cultural or artistic infrastructure. Now, that could obviously be a lot of places in Colombia. So we narrowed it down to a couple of departments just because we had to. And proximity to the sea. We wanted to know what there was something that interested us in finding out how sort of people live but by the sea, what that changes in a village or in a small town, how that relationship to the sea is constructed and lived on a daily basis. And actually close to the sea, within the departments we were looking at, Tolú came out as the only small town that had no permanent artistic or cultural infrastructure. So last year we went and did some field work there just to test the waters. We did we had a written poll to find out more about Tolú's cultural life and just gauge how people of Tolú were responding to this idea that we were bringing, and the reaction during that field work, which was about 4 days, was very positive, very enthusiastic, and we had a lot of people say this is exactly what Tolú needs for entertainment purposes on one hand, but for training purposes as well, to give the younger generations of Tolú sort of a safe space to go and spend their time.
So there was an overwhelmingly positive reaction to in this 4-day, let's say, trial period, and then you decided, okay, when is it you actually moved to Tolú to create this?
So we went there beginning of February and had 2 weeks, according to the schedule that we'd established. We had 2 weeks to find the space. And so we opened La Casa Nomada mid-February, and it went on until the 11th of May. It was a 3 months initiative, which was always the case. It didn't finish early or anything. That was the project.
3 months, and 3 months to, let's say, alter the cultural barriers and dimensions of Tolu. Because I think of Tolu, it's a beach town. It's kind of Tolu and Corvinas, they come in the same breath, and especially when you're talking to people from Medellin. I mean, that's their access to the beach. And so sometimes it feels when you're there in season, which fortunately I've only spent a few hours there in high season, it feels it's easier for you to get a bandeja paisa there than actual, let's say, fish dish.
Uh-huh. Yes, no, there's truth to that.
So
we were also there in very high season. We were there during Holy Week,
okay.
There's anecdotes for you later about that. That was quite a special week to be in Tolu.
Not so holy, I think.
Well, and actually very holy.
Okay.
It's a very surprising combination of extremely holy, and for other people, just big party.
I could just imagine that the streets are running with aguardiente. I mean, they're flowing with it down the middle of the streets. People on those kind of, I guess there's sort of bicycles that four or five people get on and cycle and stuff, and they're pouring shots down their throats.
The BC taxis.
Uh-huh.
There is that, but no, the religious and the religious element and the holiness of Holy Week is very present in Tolu, because they've got the Brotherhood of the Nazarenes who are there, and starting from the Sunday before, which is the Friday before, it's nearly 9 days, and there's processions every single day then that go all around the village, and there's a number of masses throughout the day for different audiences and in different churches. Very, very committed to the religious aspect of Tolu, of Holy Week in Tolu. But then, yes, the tourists are here as well, and they do want to party as they watch the processions go by.
So you and your partner, who's Andres Montes Zuluaga, you guys run Defiant Reality Theatre for Change. So you find a location, let's say Tolu, it's perhaps starved of this kind of cultural interaction. You find, therefore, a house or an abandoned school or something else. What do you offer the community then over these 3 months?
So we offered theatre workshops. We offered theatre workshops specifically for children and others specifically for adults. And that was a weekly activity. The group of adults was a very dedicated group that we had the workshop with them every Wednesday night. Workshop for children, a very dedicated group of kids as well. And the first ones that actually came into La Casa Nomada were playing football outside in the street. And they saw we'd painted the sign La Casa Nomada on the wall of the house. And we opened the door and very curiously kind of popped their heads in. Like, oh, what's going on here? And they came, that's just an example, but they came to every single event that we presented there, including the workshop. So we did theatre workshops for kids, theatre workshops for adults. We did film screenings as well. For that, we had a focus on Colombian cinema, and After a few weeks of just Colombian cinema, we obviously asked the community what they wanted to see. So we branched out a little bit in terms of the films that we showed, so that it also met, you know, what they wanted to see, because there's no cinema in Tulum. And that was really successful. We did it in two spaces as well. We did it in La Casa Nómada, but we also took it to the streets. So we would just set up the projector in the street, project on a wall, and 50 to 60 people would show up with their chairs and just sit there in the street with us and watch a film.
Cinema Paradiso.
A little bit like that.
I like it. Did they have requests for films?
They did have requests for films.
Not like films that you see on buses here, like, I don't know, some B-movie, but ultra-violent, you know, Hollywood.
Hollywood, yes. B-violent, B-movie and violent? Not at all. I'll give you three guesses to guess one of the movies that was asked for.
Con Air. Con Air.
Ah, no. More recent.
More recent. Hollywood.
Hollywood blockbuster.
Jurassic Park 5.
That would have been a good one, yeah. But no.
I can't
think.
It has to do with the sea. Titanic.
Aquaman. Close.
Aquaman. I've braved my 15 minutes of Aquaman and I had to turn it off, I'm afraid. So it wouldn't have come fresh to my memory.
And it was so popular the first time that we did it a second time.
You're responsible for the corruption of the minds of the youth of Tulum, Aquaman. It's just like it's a space movie just painted blue.
Space movie in the sea.
Yeah.
The space sea movie.
Yeah. Okay, but that's really cool. I like the idea of you taking the cinema into the streets. I like that. And what about street theatre?
No, so street theatre, straight theatre, we presented in La Casa Nómada. But we also presented more performances or live actions in the streets of Tulum. And that was really interesting. And the reactions were very varied, but on the whole, very positive. For example, this was quite a magical moment in one of the actions that was done. Andres received an invitation to take part in an artistic event that's called Mingas de Cuerpos. And it's an event curated between Colombia, Brazil, and Mexico. And so they send an invite out to different artists. And the deal is that on the same day, at the same time, each artist is going to present an action wherever they are. And the theme for this one was water. And Andres did an interpretation of the sea concert by a Polish theater maker, Tadeusz Kantor. And what it is there's a platform in the sea, and so Andres stood on it, and he was like an orchestra leader, and so leading the orchestra of the sea. And we got people from the beach to sit in chairs that we'd set right on the edge of the water to watch the concert.
It's very cool indeed, and quite, you know, quite out there. I keep thinking for a small community of this nature, but of course so connected to the water that they probably saw a significance in it.
I think they did, and I think the unexpectedness and the poetry of that was, because when we came up to them on the beach, we explained what was going on. We're like, would you be happy to be part of the audience and sit in the chair? You don't have to do anything. You just have to watch the action and enjoy the sea concert. And out of curiosity, they're like, well, why not? I'm on the beach anyway, and the chair is literally there. So I'll happily take part. And the feedback afterwards was really beautiful. There was the surprise element as well, and how how simple really the action was, but how powerful it was. And yes, you're absolutely right. That connection to the sea just added something else that seemed very relevant to Tulum.
Very cool indeed. So, so you were there through season. You saw the Holy Week. You saw the flood of people. Did the, let's say, this fluid nature of it being a tourist, a domestic tourist destination, affect mm-hmm. what you were doing?
No, not at all. It's only actually 10 days. So the rest, we had our weekly activities, weekly screenings. There were also events that were organized and that were initiated by the Tulu community, and we helped more with bringing it to life and the logistics of it. Then in Holy Week, we actually took part in it. We met someone in Tulu called Alberto Morales. Morales, I don't know why I'm saying that with an English accent. Alberto Morales, who is a theatre director, and he is in charge of the Cuadros Vivos, which is a very particular sort of cultural manifestation of Tulu, and it happens on Holy Thursday, and it's in the streets of Tulu. So it was a group of about 25 of us. He works with the young people of Tulu, and he gave Andres the part of Jesus, and I had the part of the Samaritan. And through the streets of Tulu, moving, it's Jesus's journey with the cross live. And so we were very much involved in that. So I think for us, the activity during Holy Week definitely didn't stop. And we took advantage of the influx of people to present other things, like we did a marathon of a video performance that we projected on a wall in Tulum. And there were some artistic actions taking place within the village as well. So of taking advantage of the influx as well. Just to show that something else was happening in Tulu at that time. But the Cuadros Vivos undeniably took up a lot of time during that busy, busy touristic time.
Sure. So one thing is that, you spent 3 months there. It was always going to be 3 months, and you weren't going to extend it. But did the town feel that you've abandoned them a bit on leaving?
I hope not. I hope not. Part of the work we did was also to support what was going on in Tulu. And by support, I also mean emotional and motivational support. For example, so to give you an idea, over the 3 months, approximately 1,700 people came through the Casa Nómada doors, whether that be for the workshops, for the events. So that's the amount of people that we reached over the 3 months. Now, within those 1,700, there's a group of over 30 people that really appeared as core supporters of what we were doing. And with a lot of them, they already had work going, and I think us arriving in Tulu and being there with them as well sort of gave them a lot of motivation to carry on. For example, we met a fantastic teacher called Marta Gonzalez, who she's a music teacher and a Spanish teacher in a school for girls, and she runs an all-girl band. So every 2 weeks, I think it is, the girls rehearse in the school, and then from time to time they present a concert. So we went along to Marta's rehearsals and got to get to know the girls a little bit. And I think having their initiatives valued, because they're going against the grain with what they're offering. I mean, Marta, there's loads of times where she's got to continue, sometimes without the support of any institution, sometimes with missing instruments. So and through it all, she just powers on through. But very understandably, at times she feels a little bit alone. So I think to have us there as well, really complimenting her work and just in awe of everything that she does despite the difficulties, was helpful to her. There's another cultural fundación, which is like the leading one in Tolu, called Funsi Culto, led by the president, Lucy de Mailtus, who, again, I think for her, she already had events planned, but I think to get that surge of energy from people who believe in the value of culture and who want to help gave her sort of renewed energy to carry on with what she was already doing. So hopefully they don't feel abandoned. We're still in touch with quite a lot of them, actually. And there's another example of someone who's carrying on with the work. There's another teacher who's called Dalis Ricardo Franco. And she wanted, when we first arrived, she wanted to do an event that had to do with sort of with promoting sort of a Tolu culture that had been a little bit lost over the years, traditional cooking, traditional music. So going from her proposal, we organized one of my favorite events that happened in La Casa Nomae was for International Women's Day. So this all came from Dalis Ricardo Franco's proposal. We organized an event that was called El Poder de las Mujeres, and we invited a lot of women from Tolu to share what they knew. So there's a woman of Tolu, Maria, who came and she cooked a traditional dish in leña on firewood. There was a girl who came to braid hair. There's a 94-year-old woman who's a musician who came and played an instrument called el carangano, which is almost extinct. It's like a wooden box on the floor, and it's got a string attached to it, and it's got a wooden arc. And so you tie the wooden arc you sustain it to a tree, and then to tighten the string. And so then you play the string, and it's kind of this incredible sound between bass and percussion. And she's 94. And she was rocking that carangano.
I've never heard of this instrument before.
We have a recording of it somewhere. A lot of people recorded it because it's an instrument a lot of people from Tolu, especially the younger generations, had never heard the sound of. Who else was there? Erita was there as well. She's a dancer, and she did a demonstration of bullerengue. And another friend had brought drums, and some of the friends in the audience just grabbed the drums and started drumming along to Erita dancing bullerengue. It was an incredible day, a very, very powerful day in terms of sharing, exchanging, you know, cultural knowledge, cultural memory, and building that Tolu memory as well. And so from that event, Dalis Ricardo Franco wanted to pursue with these kinds of initiatives. So she's already planning. It's in a library that's a little bit on the outskirts of Tolu, in a more vulnerable part of the village. She's planning an event there again with Erita to showcase some traditional dancing. She's talking to how do you say contadoras?
Accountants.
No, the ones who tell stories.
Oh, cuenteros?
Ah, gracias.
Sí. Storytellers.
Yes. Storytellers. Yeah. Thank you. So she's in the process of putting an event like that in a library with the kids of this particular part of Tolu. So I think from a motivational and energy point of view, there are definitely things that have stayed in Tolu.
Mm-hmm. I think you definitely tapped into a current. I mean, the culture existed, but perhaps needed to be sort of shaken up, perhaps maybe to connect one with another. If you talk about the bullerengue, the drums, I can't even think of what that musical instruments called again.
Carangano.
Karangaro. I think it's, you see, this culture exists. It just needed the spark plug, you know, say. But
absolutely, absolutely. The culture of Tolu is definitely there. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about connecting. There was a very strong sense of every time people came to La Casa Noma, of connecting them together and presenting them. And so we met, for example, someone called Omar, who's got a foundation in Tolu called Sefardik that works with recycling. So they do, they pick up recycling in Tolu. They also create arts and crafts made from recycled materials. And they also have a whole artistic training side to the foundation where they work with younger kids from the more vulnerable parts of Tolu and they teach them to dance. They presented an event in La Casa Noma as well. And we managed to link them with Eva Amaya, for example, who she also does jewelry, arts and crafts jewelry. And she was really interested then to know about Sefartik's work with the recycled materials, and there's a bridge that was kind of connected there. And those bridges, I think, were so important. And I feel that more than the entertainment of the events, the connecting of people was very beautiful. And it, because a lot of them knew each other, they just didn't really know what the other one did.
Yeah.
And then some of them, you know, surprised them with. Dalice Ricardo Franco, for example, she's a teacher, very proactive teacher in Tolu, but she hadn't put together an event like the one that we created together. So
that's my phone. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Yes, very aware of that. I don't have a phone yet.
Okay, keep going, please.
Yeah. So that was a very. A very beautiful sort of connection as well. Then the community of Tolu surprising each other.
Yeah.
In what they did, and then it even went a little bit further away from Tolu. We found an incredible ally and friend in a woman called Lorena Otero, who she's got a cultural hostel about 15 minutes away from Tolu in Puerto Viejo. Her hostel is called Demar Amar. And when we met, we presented, we met through a friend from Tolu. And despite being far, open and close the brackets, but far by Tolu standards, yeah. You have to take a car and go 15 minutes outside of it. Do you know what I mean? There's people who don't cross the city walking, so because it's too far. Lorena was an incredible ally. She came to almost everything we did. She was part of the theater group for adults. We went over there when she organized events because she also had guest dancers come in and do workshops in the hostel. And I think a lot of the people that we did meet in La Casa Noma, then we would all go over there to Demar Amar and be by the sea together and do something else there. So I think we even opened up the scope of what was possible to do in Tolu, at least all the way to Demar Amar. And Lorena's hostel is an incredible place. So we were, you know, I think it was happy, the both of us, to support each other's initiatives.
You talked earlier about, let's say, going against the grain, this girl who's going against the grain, you guys were going against the grain, and then you mentioned the vulnerable communities and so on. I have to ask, you know, Tolu, Corvenias, you know, the coastal side might be all right, but into the interior a little bit more, these areas of Sucre and Cordoba are complicated. Were you seen as a threat in any way? Was there any sort of, let's say, grumblings of lack of content with your presence?
No.
Good.
No, we didn't. No, in a grumbling in Tolu, yes. In regards to us, we were very aware that it was maybe a possibility. So we also had our eyes kind of wide open, but absolutely nothing, not even a shadow of a threat or nothing, nothing came to us.
Great. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and so we were living in a neighborhood, sort of, again, by Tolu standards, far away from like Sonoma, and were really sort of supported by our neighbors there. The first time we took the cinema outside of La Casa Nomada to the streets, we did it in our street, and one neighbor he had a big nice white wall. We're like, oh, this is perfect. He's like, you can definitely use that. Another neighbor arrived with 10 chairs in case people didn't have them, and we felt sort of very looked after by our neighbors. And because we were in a residential part of Tolu, I don't think a lot of people arrived there just for 3 months. And no, we were very, very looked after.
So you were clearly the exotic attractions in Tolu at this time. Now, you have told me off air, and now we're going to tell it on air, but you're moving to Buenaventura to do the same thing.
Yes, we are. Well, it's going to be a little bit different, in the sense that we've got a local ally in Buenaventura, a local partner that we're going to be working with. And we're very, very excited about that. It's a fundación. How do you say fundación in English?
Foundation?
Can you say foundation?
Yeah.
That just sounds, okay.
It sounds wooden, but you can say a foundation. Yeah.
Sounds wooden. That it does.
Yeah.
So a foundation called Fundes Codes. I can't remember what it stands for now.
That's all right. It's too many acronyms in Colombia.
Yeah, a lot of acronyms. But they're a wonderful foundation who work towards defenses of human rights, preservation and liberation of territory, ancestral territory. They have a whole academic program working with young people where they organize cinema workshops, and they've got a theater group, and they've got a library in the house that they've built. They've built the house themselves, and it's still growing. So we're extremely excited to go to Buenaventura for the second Casa Nómada and to have it linked to Fundes Codes. So which is going to be, in essence, a completely different experience to Tolu. We're quite excited in the sense that it means there's an audience that's already there as well. So they're definitely going against the grain with the kind of work they're doing, a very strong memory work as well. so we're going to be working with the theatre group that is already constituted within Fundes Codes. And we're going to be working with them with a specific kind of theatre, which is called spontaneous theatre. And thanks to Fundes Codes, we already have branched out to other allies in Buenaventura. So, for example, the final showing of the theater group is going to be in Fundes Codes, but also in La Universidad del Valle in Buenaventura. There's a strong connection that's been made with the cultural area of the Banco de la República in Buenaventura. And another theater that's called Es Su Casa. So we're arriving there sort of with a stronger support network.
Which is going to be wonderful. You need it. I mean, Buenaventura is just a different equation altogether, that city. I mean, please be careful there in that city. But I think with your allies, you'll be fine. But what can you say as we wind this down? What you learned in Tolu, is there anything that you would approach, let's say, Buenaventura differently, having learned, from errors or from positives in Tolu?
What are we approaching differently? I think what we're approaching differently is going in and testing the waters, in the sense finding out more about what the community wants to see, and then building our sort of intervention from that, which is what ended up happening with the cinema in Tulu. We wanted to present Colombian cinema. We thought it was important, but we also wanted to have a dialogue with the community. And so the second half of La Casa Nomada was actually a complete collaboration with the community of Tulu to meet also, it's not needs, we're talking about art and culture, but their desires. So with the help of the allies in Buenaventura, we've got already more information in order to be able to get to that point of communication with the community more quickly. In Tulu, we built everything from scratch. We arrived from scratch. No one knew us. So that's one thing we learned from Tulu, and that in Buenaventura is made possible in a very easy manner. The other thing that worked really well in Tulu and that we're going to carry on in Buenaventura was artist residencies. We had four artists come to Tulu between 2 to 3 weeks from very different parts, one of them from Medellin, one of them from Bogota, one of them from London, and one of them from Mexico. So I think learning from everything in Tulu, I think this Buenaventura one, we're going to be almost like a cultural embassy of building those bridges. And it's what we love doing, building the bridges. So having more artists in residency come to Buenaventura, connecting them with Fundescores, connecting them with Universidad del Valle, us presenting our work as well, because I presented my play in Tulu and it went super well. I'm really looking forward to presenting it in Buenaventura. Andres también, Andres as well. Presented his so bridges with that
So the two final things then. I don't know how much research you need to do, because plain to see that Aquaman will be requested at least twice in Buenaventura, or maybe it's a different movie that they prefer on the Pacific Coast. Secondly, how do you fund all of this?
An excellent question. So the first one, we did a crowdfunding campaign, an international crowdfunding campaign, and we hit the target. We kind of, which is great that we hit the target, but we should have asked for more money, is the bottom line of what I'm trying to say, because we did everything. Not scraped by either. I don't know where I'm getting at. That's how we funded it, a crowdfunding campaign, which we didn't want to do for the second one. And the second one, very pleasingly, and it just felt like a nice recognition of the work we'd done, we got a grant from the Ministry of Culture.
That's very positive indeed. Especially under this government. Don't let me get started on that.
No time to get started on that. Really. There's always time to get started. It's all another podcast.
Yeah, another podcast, another rant, another day. But listen, really interesting and really fascinating how, you know, something that started in Tulu can then move to Buenaventura. So you're going coast to coast. You're going to have to go to somewhere like the Llanos after that, you know, just to sort of, you know, balance stuff out. Too much coastline, you have to go somewhere totally landlocked. But let me say thank you.
We're going to turn semi-aquatic.
But thank you so much for your time and for sharing these stories, which are, you know, ultimately they're so very uplifting that there's people willing to do these things. That's, you know, I guess it's with the mind of opening horizons and just letting people know that there's something more out there, especially in these small communities.
And yes, and there's also something very strong to be said for It opened, it broadened our horizons as well very much. I mean, we've traveled a bit more with Andres than a lot of people of Tolu have, for example. But our horizons are constantly broadened and expanded and challenged, and we really went into Tolu, I think, because that's just how we are as artists anyway, but not as preachers of anything, but more, this is what we've developed over the years and the skills, and let's share, and what do you know how to do, what can you teach me, and that, I think that's the key to it. That's the key to it as well, to give that value, or to recognize that value of what is already there. Like you mentioned, there is culture in Tolu. So we're really looking forward to carrying on, and also because we're still, I've been in Colombia for a year and a half, and this is obviously from here, but there's such a cultural and natural sort of paradisiacal quality to Colombia that it just feels like a real privilege to be able to get to know some of its territories and some of its history and some of its very varied landscapes and very varied culture. The culture of Buenaventura is going to be completely different to the Caribbean coast, to the music, the food, the how people talk. There's a real sense of feeling very privileged to be able to do that.
Phenomenal. Listen, thank you to Maud Madeline of Defiant Reality and Theatre for Change for sharing her stories on the line from Cali. Check out, you must have a website or something that people can check out.
We're working on the website. For now, you can find us on Facebook. And yes, you can definitely follow us through there.
Okay. So Defiant Reality, Theatre for Change.
Theatre for Change.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Check out that on Facebook. We'll post the link, of course, so people can get to it from our Facebook page. Thank you again for your time. I imagine that you're in full-on preparation mode. When do you move to Buenaventura?
End of July.
Soon. Very soon indeed. So good luck with all of that. And once you've finished, let's have you back on here to talk about the experiences and compare and contrast.
Oh, yes, please. It'd be great.
Be fun. So
it'd be
anyway.
Great. And it'd be great to tell you about the similarities and differences of Tolu and Buenaventura when we finish the 3 months there.
You know, I think it would be absolutely mind-boggling to try and sort of decipher some of those differences within Colombia's borders. It's just incredible. You're going to be comparing the whole time. But unfortunately, we don't have any more time. We can't keep talking. I could keep talking. We've been talking to Maud Madeline, as I said before. That's Defiant Reality Theatre for Change. Check out their page on Facebook. There will be a website before long. This has been episode 279. I've been Richard Bacall here in London for Colombia Calling this week. I'll be back in Colombia in July, so the next couple of podcasts will be coming from London to you out there. Please remember to keep tuning in each week. Share the show with all your friends and loved ones. Otherwise, you know, it's just me speaking out over the wilderness of the ether. Thank you again, and goodbye.